Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 155, 155. And we are now in chapter 25 of Genesis. In verse 1 we read, now that Isaac is married, and a new chapter in life begins here in the history of the family of Abraham. And Isaac, in essence, becomes now the center of the story. He gets married. Rebecca replaces Sarah, so she's now the mistress of the house. And obviously, Abraham now without a wife, he is on the sidelines, so to speak, and he begins his own life. And so God doesn't tell us too much about it. History picks up the pieces. Josephus tells us a few things about Abraham and his future life after the death of his wife. At the time, he was 137, she was 127, and obviously, Isaac was 37 years old. And then there was a period of mourning, and so about 3 years later, Isaac gets married, and so now he's 40 years, and Abraham is 140, and we don't know how long did it take between that time, that is the wedding of his son, and the time that he himself decided that it's not good to be alone. You know, as the Bible says, it's not good for a man to be alone. He needs a helpmate. And his wife was dead, so he needed another wife. And so this is what we read here in chapter 25 and verse 1. And Abraham took another wife. Some in their ignorance think that she was just a concubine. Well, a concubine a person will have when he already has a wife. But if he has no wife, the person that he takes to be his wife is his wife and not his concubine. And so we read very plainly that he had another wife. Sarah was the first wife, and Keturah comes from the word lekater, which means to offer incense. And so her name was Keturah. And whether she was one of the girls that, you know, was among his group, one of those that came from his home country, the land, after all, he brought many with him, and could even be one of the girls that Eliezer brought back, that was one of the damsels that came with Isaac. We don't know exactly the details, but obviously Abraham is going to marry a virgin. He's going to marry a young woman, and her name was Keturah. And then we read, and she bore him Zimran, and Yokshan, and Medan, and Midian. Now Midian, later on we shall encounter him, because Midian was the father of the Midianites, and they generally, unfortunately, had an awful lot of problems with the children of Israel, mostly at enmity with them. But ironically also, on the flip side, the father-in-law of Moses was a priest of Midian. In other words, son of Abraham, directly from Keturah, which is very interesting. And then we read about Ishbak and Shua and Jokshan begat Sheba and Dedan. And the sons of Dedan were Ashurim and Letushim and Leumim. Now, mind you, we are not given here a genealogy of every single son and their grandchildren, but the ones that we are given, God is making a point. These people are going to, somewhere down the road, be linked to the history of Israel, and in particular, the one called Ashurim. Ashurim, that's in the plural. In other words, his name was Ashur. And Ashurim means speaking about his children. And all the others are spoken in the plural. In other words, all the people that came from these sons of Abraham. So I had several sons. And from Ashur, as we mentioned earlier, we touched on that, this grandson of Abraham, that later on were sent back east, in other words, into the territory of Babylon and the northern part of it, up and down of it, you know. They could talk about Syria, northern Syria, anywhere along the rivers. And so later on we read about this Ashur, much more in history and less in the Bible. But history tells us a lot about it. Josephus tells us that this grandson of Abraham, Ashur, lived in the area that Netanel was called after his name, as was the custom of the time, the manner of the time. A person goes to a certain area, becomes a patriarch, you know, he owns that territory, and he calls it after his name. And so he says the land of Assyria was named after this grandson of Abraham. Now you have basically two Assyrians. One that came from Ashur, that was a son of Arpachshad, who was the son of Shem. And then this Ashur, that was a son of Abraham, in other words, it's another one with the same name, and they lived side by side. And history tells us an awful lot about them. We have a lot of information about this Ashur in history, in Josephus, and many other secular sources, that basically they lived side by side. They had very similar qualities. They were very much admired by the Assyrian that came from the other line of Shem, from Arpachshad. And later on, they merged in many ways in terms of culture and even partially by marriage, to a degree anyway, even though they stayed separate, they still, you know, had an awful lot of military and social links and cultural links, and even in terms of religion, many things like that. And then as time went by, the Assyrian Empire rose and then was crushed later on, and then they began migrating toward Northwest Europe. And this too, being linked in so many ways, migrated together with them. So here we find two Assyrian people, and of course most people, biblically speaking, know about Assyria, the ancient ancestors of the modern Assyrians that are known today as Germans, but they don't know as much about this one because they simply, you know, did not learn or did not study history, did not research, and did not realize there is more than one. This Assyrian from Abraham, Ashur, became later on the people of the Hittite Empire. In other words, they were of the white race, like Abraham, and they went to an area that was in Turkey, that was dominated by Hittites that were Hamitic in race, and as usual, the children of Abraham are colonizers. They rise to the top, they take over, and they reign over that area. And so there were, in essence, two Hittite empires. There was the ancient one of the Hamitic race, and then that was crushed also by natural process of conquering and going to war and all these kind of things. And these people took over, and they became the more famous in history Hittite empire. Now, for a long time, archaeologists did not, historians did not believe that there was such a thing as a Hittite empire, in terms of the white Hittite empire, and all the exploits that were told by others. And even the Bible mentions them, the Hittites, that had links with King Solomon, who used to trade with them in horses and many other things. And that was of the white race. And then, of course, also there was Uriah the Hittite, that was probably from that empire, from that land. And they were not the Hamitic race, they were the white race that took over that place and were named later on by the same. Not that they were named that way by themselves. But the way it goes, historians, just like the people that came to this country, the United States, that found the Indians here, they call them Indians. The Indians didn't call themselves Indians. They didn't know there is such a name. They give them that name. And then the white people from Europe come over here and dominate this land, take over, become the predominant people here. And then later on they become known as Americans. You see? When in essence they're all Europeans, or in many other countries where they came from. And so it happened also with the Hittite Empire. They came to that land, and they took over that land, and of course they didn't call themselves a Hittite. They knew that who they were. They were Assyrians. That is, grandchildren of Abraham. And historians come later on down the road and give them their names. or what other people call them. And so it goes. Anyway, these people had an awful lot of history, because many of them, later on, as I said, he established the Hittite Empire, and then went even further and established some colonies in North Africa. And from there, we hear about two famous sons of this nation of Assyria, of Ashur, who are grandchildren of Abraham. And the famous these two names are Enan, who was from this territory of the Assyrian, of the children of Abraham, now the other Assyrians. And his sons, actually he went to what is known later on as Rome. Of course, at the time there was no Rome, but he went over there in a later migration and became part of the natives that later on established the Republican Rome that was to be succeeded later on by the well-known Rome, the Roman Empire. But, you know, previously began with the patriarchs, certain families that began to establish, you know, a certain territory and then a city and then a land and whatever, which gradually became mightier and mightier. And so two of the sons of this Enan were known, as the history tells us, as the legendary Remus and Remulus, that supposedly were nursed by wolf, and then later on became the ones that established the Roman Empire, at least were a part of the patriarchs that were responsible for that. And so you see an interesting links here, you know, between the children of Abraham. But the majority of them migrated later on into Northwest Europe, and they're today called the Austrian people. In other words, having many links to Germans, they migrated together. That is, a main body of them, not all of them, many of them, at least a good size of them remain behind to this very day. But the majority went to Austria, what became known later on as Austria. And you see that they have some similarities to the Germans, but on the other hand, many, many other qualities are totally different. And they live side by side. History is very interesting. And when you study the chronology, that is, the genealogy of the rulers of Austria, they have a tree, that is, one that describes all those who ruled in that area, and all the way back to the beginner of that dynasty, and the one at the top is called Abraham. Obviously, they are his children. And the history of Abraham is extremely important. So when you read the statement earlier that God made to Abraham, that you shall be a father of many nations, and kings shall come out of you, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed, you begin to understand how true this statement is and how far-reaching it went, because some other children of these children of Abraham, they went into many parts of that world, either Asia Minor, that is called later on Turkey, or Afghanistan, Pakistan, many of those places, the whites among them, the children of Abraham, other areas there, and then some of them. One of them is called he was a grandson of Abraham, was called Ephron, that came from Epher. And Epher was the son of Midian, so Midian was the son of Abraham, Epher was his son, and from this Ephron, some of the children went toward Africa, Libya in particular, and they called it after the name of their father. Ephron later on became known as Africa. And so you see many of the people of North Africa are also children of Abraham. And many other places. Anyway, very interesting history. And obviously, much of it is preserved in history, not as much in the Bible, because they did not have personal links, generally speaking, with the children of Israel, so the Bible didn't see it fit to describe their future history. But it gave their genealogy, the beginning of it, and then left the rest for humanity or for history to preserve. And now, as I mentioned earlier, the Hittite Empire, that was a mighty empire, and was described by others, ancient writers. Later on, as time went by, it totally disappeared, and obviously they migrated to either, some of them, Rome, became a part of the Italian nation, and most of them went to Austria, and some of them remained behind in what is called later on by the Greeks White Syria. And some of them are still to this very day in Syria. And by the way, when you look at people like Assad and his family and his people, they have a European look, and they are from a small minority, the Alawites, they call them, in Syria, that basically are children of this Assyria, or Ashur, the son of Abraham. So you find this Assyrian on the border of Israel, and unfortunately at enmity with them, just like all the other children of Israel in the area. That is, the children of Abraham, or relatives of Abraham, be it the Jordanians, Ammon and Moab, or be it the Arabs, many of them from Abraham, not all of them. And so God, in essence, retained many of the children of Abraham all around Israel, because he has a plan of salvation for them too, and deliverance, as you can read in Isaiah chapter 19, the day will come, where he speaks in specific about, at that point, about Egypt. Many of them, were children of Abraham, from Ishmael, obviously, and then others that joined them. And so they are going to be on the south, and they're going to be a blessed nation by God, that is, after God deals with them and restores them to him. Because once upon a time, their forefather, Ishmael, was a man who obeyed God. God knew that son by name, gave him his own name, Ishmael, God will hear, spoke to his mother twice, you see, and blessed him abundantly. And for a while, he worshipped the God of his father, obviously, Abraham. And then as time goes by, people forget, and they depart, and they go astray, just like the children of Israel themselves. If not for the God of Israel, who constantly brought them back to himself, they would have been into idolatry. And so you see also to a degree that the children of Ishmael were, at least to a partial relationship, were brought back to the God of their father. And so to this very day they worship Allah, of course with their own concepts and ideas, but then the children of Israel are no different. They too continue to worship the God of Israel, their own concepts and ideas. And so you see variations there. And so basically you see the overwhelming majority of the children of Abraham today have a partial relationship to the degree that they understand and comprehend, to the degree that God allowed them to know him, and they have a partial knowledge of the God of Abraham. And so they all, one way or the other, worship the God of Abraham, of course, with variations and their own concepts and misconceptions also. And so that's in essence the children of Keturah. Now Keturah, as I said, was his wife, second wife. And through this second wife, he produced many, many nations, you see, many more than through Sarah. Through Sarah, she had only one son, Isaac. But here he has many children. And as Josephus tells us, that Abraham had 32 children, even though they are not all mentioned here, because he married not only Keturah, but in verse 6 we shall read that he married even more than that. And so he had many children, and they were all princes, mighty princes. And they were, as Josephus tells us, basically colonizers. And so when he sent them back east, they began to spread all over the place, and they dominated many areas. Many, as I mentioned earlier, even Africa was a part of their dominion. That is North Africa, and then, of course, the whole continent was renamed after the name of grandson of Abraham, Ephron. And so we read here in verse 5, and Abraham gave all that he had unto Isaac. You see, the birthright went to Isaac. And when it says all that he has, does not mean that all the others, were put in the poorhouse. What it means is that the main blessings, the main riches that he had, the servants and all that, basically the majority went to this son of Abraham. But as for the rest, he also gave them blessings, and he gave them gifts, and he gave them riches. He didn't send them in poverty, somewhere else. And so it says, but unto the sons of the concubines. Now, unfortunately, some people, even in the commentary here, in the Jewish commentary, not willing to acknowledge the fact, which is a reality that is known in the, at least in the history, in the ancient times, Josephus preserves that knowledge that Abraham had many wives, not only one. Friendly, God gave him strength and health, and God continued to work with him on a different level, obviously, not anymore on the level of you know, the promises and covenants in terms of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That was aside, one section of it, and the other one he brought still, as he promised him, many sons and many kings and many nations out of him. So this is another chapter, so to speak, of the relationship of Abraham with God, of which we know very little in terms of the Bible, but so much more so in terms of history. And so this is the other part of it. And of course, since it's not emphasized in the Bible, therefore people don't pay attention to it, and they have misconceptions. And the Jews, though they have known for the longest time that Abraham had many wives, that is, he had a wife again, since his wife Sarah was dead, he had Keturah, and then he also had many other women that were called concubines, or Pilagshim in Hebrew. Pilegesh is generally the name that you give to the second wife, and third and fourth and fifth, so to speak. And they're not on the same level of the first one, who has a preeminence, just like the preeminence of the firstborn. It doesn't mean that the other are not sons of the same father, it just means that they don't have the same eminence or preeminence as the firstborn. And the firstborn generally would be the one to be the heir. And if the father is a king, then the firstborn will be the future king, the heir. But all the others are still the sons, so they are princes. But they're not the heir to the throne, destined to be the king. And so are the Pilakshim also. They're wives, just like all the others are wives, just like the first one is wife. Though they're not on the same level in terms of preeminence. That's all it means. And so we read here that Abraham gave all that he had unto Isaac, but unto the sons of the concubines, because he had many more wives that Abraham had. Abraham gave gifts. As I said, you know, the Jews and others, you know, in later times, not in the beginning, came up with a concept, well, the concubines speaking about Keturah and about Hagar, which is foolish to say, because Hagar was sent away a long time ago. You see, she's not even in the picture here. And here it says, to the sons of the concubines that he had, he gave gifts and sent them away from Isaac his son while he lived eastward unto the east country, to the area of the rivers, you know, the Euphrates and the Tigris River, as it's called in Greek. And obviously, it doesn't make sense to say that Hagar is one of them, because Hagar was sent to the south. First, she was in the Negev of Beersheba, and then she went to the wilderness of Paran, and then gradually headed toward the territory of Egypt, and then the children, as they multiplied, they went up and down the coast, you see. But basically, she went south. Well, here, all these children of concubines go east. So he's not talking about them. And that's an unfortunate when people want to twist history to fit their own misconceptions. In other words, they in essence want to apologize for Abraham. No, he just had one wife. He wasn't messing around with a lot of women. Well, that's a much later interpretation that entered into the minds of some rabbis when the concept of multiple wives became repugnant to many in the Jewish community, and therefore they were embarrassed, so to speak, about Abraham having more than one wife, you know, all these concubines, and so they wanted to minimize supposedly his wild life, so to speak, whatever it may be. Anyway, that's foolishness, because the Bible makes it very plain. He had a wife, and he had concubines, and ancient history has plenty of information about that to know otherwise. And so to the children of the concubines, he gave all these gifts, and obviously he sent them and he sent the concubines, but his wife Keturah still remained with him. He didn't send her away. There was no reason to send his wife away, you see. But as for the children of all the women that he had, you see, he sent them away so there wouldn't be any competition with Isaac, to avoid any future problems. Just like God earlier wanted to make a separation between Abraham and Lot, his nephew, which he didn't want really to be in the land, because he wanted Isaac to be the one to continue the dynasty that he was beginning through Abraham. And so this is what you read in verse 6, but unto the sons of the concubines that Abraham had, Abraham gave gifts, and he sent them away from Isaac his son, and they went into the east country, that is the territory of Babylon, but then Babylon, you know, expanded and conquered many other territories, and so these people began to spread all over the place. And these are the days of the years of Abraham's life, which he had lived, 135 years. So it was 175 when he died, which means that if he remarried, let's say, about 140 when he was 140, so he had another 35 years, more or less, of life with Keturah and abundance of children and grandchildren that he saw from these children, beside Isaac, and the fact also that Isaac was 40 when he got married, but only 60 when he had children 20 years later, which means that Abraham saw his grandchildren from Isaac when he was 160. That means he saw them only for 15 years, but for his own children, you know, he had many children as soon as he got married, and, you know, later on they had children. And so he saw an awful lot of grandchildren in his lifetime. And Jacob and Esau knew their grandfather for 15 years before he died. So he knew an awful lot about his way of life, about his encounters with God, about much information that he had. So these were men of great knowledge and understanding. And of course the Bible doesn't tell us all these things, but, you know, this is reality. That happens anyway when there are grandchildren around and the grandparents are still around. Obviously they exchange information, and especially in an age and a time in a society where the family was much closer, and the exchange of information orally was done much more meticulously than it is done later on in societies that developed away from that, where there is less link between the older generation and the younger generations. And so Abraham expired, well, in English that's the way, expired. It's a strange word, you know, to expire. That's something you talk about a product. The word in Hebrew is gava. Gava is something that is used in connection with a plant, you know, when the plant begins to wilt. And that's the terminology that God used in Hebrew, you know, when you get older, you begin to wilt, and, you know, you get wrinkled and worn out and things like that. It's not expired. So expired does not really convey the meaning. He wilted, it'll be more correct, and died, you know. That's a process. Died in good old age. He was an old man. You see, he died in good old age. He was an old man and full of years. You see, so God is describing the death of Abraham as a man that lived a wonderful life, great life, long life, old age, full of years, you see, an awful lot of good things. In contrast to what his son, his grandson later on, Jacob, would say to the king of Egypt, Pharaoh. He says, you know, the days of my fathers were much longer than mine, and mine were few and evil. And so he had a totally different feeling about his own life, because he had an awful lot of problems in contrast to his grandfather and father. And so he was gathered to his people. Well, that's an idiom. In other words, he died. And it's not in the true sense gathered to his people, because he did not live with his people. In other words, his family was back there in the old country. But that's the terminology that was used. When you die, you go and you are buried with your family in the family plot. And obviously he was not. He was in a totally separate place. But, you know, he died and he was buried next to his wife, Sarah. And so in verse 9 we read, and Isaac and Ishmael, his sons, you see, both of them are his sons. Ishmael is still living not far from there. And Ishmael is now, if Abraham is 75, you see, and Ishmael was already, that is 175. Ishmael was born 13 years before Abraham was 100 years old when he had Isaac. So you're talking about almost a 9 years old Ishmael, an old man himself, very old man. And so he lives nearby, not too far, in the wilderness of Paran, later on Sinai and so forth, this whole territory, in other words, south, and spreading, you know, as more children, obviously, they spread here and there. And so they were still nearby and still had relations. And who knows how much more relationship they had in between them, we don't know, the Bible doesn't tell us. But obviously, in contrast to Esau, as we shall learn later on, Ishmael did not have the same animosity toward Isaac. After all, Isaac was a baby, a little child when he was cast away with his mother. Isaac had nothing to do with it. He had no time to develop any relationship with him, either good or bad, you know, in terms of hatred. And more than anything else, with a little child, you develop a good relationship. And so he didn't have any personal animosity against Ishmael, even though he made a little fun of him, which cost him an awful lot, he and his mother. But it was not a full-blown relationship of hatred that developed later on between Jacob and Esau that had future extremely dire consequences until this very day. With Isaac, it was totally different. And so they still maintain a relationship of two brothers from the same father with respect and honor for each other to a degree. And after all, Ishmael is still, walking in the ways of his father, Abraham. You see? He didn't become suddenly an idol worshiper, not when he's been raised by his father all these years, and probably after that still might have had some contact and relationship with him. Just was not allowed to live together. And so they both came and buried him in the cave of Machpelah. And if they came and buried him, obviously they sit together and they eat and they discuss things and, you know, have a relationship, and they don't necessarily stop at that point. So there's an awful lot here that the Bible doesn't tell us, but as you can imagine, normal human relationships would be there, as you would have today, you know, and under the same circumstances. And so they buried him in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar, the Hittite, which earlier Abraham purchased to bury his wife, Sarah, which is before Mamre, that is near the area of Mamre, where Abraham lived in the area of Hebron. Now, Hebron, today, previously called Bethlehem. Previously called Kiryat Arba. Anyway, that same territory there in Hebron, which is before Mamre, and the field which Abraham purchased of the children of Het, there was Abraham buried, and Sarah his wife, and of course later on also Isaac, and then Jacob, and then Joseph. And so it came to pass after the death of Abraham that God blessed Isaac his son. Now God is dealing with his son, and now he's talking to his son. Well, before he dealt basically with his father. And Isaac dwelt by Be'er Lechayroi. Now Be'er Lechayroi was in Beersheba, and that's the very place where Hagar previously met the angel of God, and he opened a well for her, so she would have water to drink, and so she called the name Be'er Lechayroi. In other words, the well of the living one who sees me. And so she gave the name to that place, and that became the name of the place. And everybody after that called it by that name. And this is where Isaac was dwelling at the time. For obvious reasons, he has an awful lot of cattle and servants and all that. And so when you have a well, you have water, and especially the one that God himself opened, that becomes very important to the family, obviously. It is of a divine fiat, so to speak. God was involved in that. So obviously an awful lot of people develop a tremendous respect and appreciation. And probably, you know, unfortunately, these people do also some kind of superstitions about that very place. In either case, this is where Isaac was dwelling. And then now we read about the children of Ishmael. Now God is switching to Ishmael. And God finds it very important also to record, as we read earlier, the genealogy of any people that God wants his people Israel, to know, because they're going to be linked with them one way or the other. Oftentimes, in terms of their history in the past, but also in the future, because sometimes, you know, we don't think about it, we think only about the past, and we forget. All these people are going to be resurrected, and these are going to be their names, and they're going to read about themselves, and this is going to be their genealogy. And God will trace, you know, the rest of the genealogy that themselves have lost. And so all this words and names will become so much more meaningful as they come back to life, obviously in the second resurrection. But as life goes on, what difference does it make? You know, first or second resurrection or 1,000 years ago, you know, this is the history of your people from Abraham. And so God is switching now to this genealogy, and for good reason, as always, people that come into links with his own nation, Israel, he's going to report something about them. And so in verse 12 we read, now these are the generations of Ishmael. And Ishmael is right here with Isaac, probably stayed around, you know, for a little while because of the mourning period, 7 days, and then some more time after that. So he's now on the limelight, so to speak, in the limelight, and therefore God is at this point describing the genealogies of Ishmael, the son of Abraham. And so this is what we read. Now these are the generations of Ishmael, Abraham's son. See, it was his son, and not just like not like some people, unfortunately, because of their background and misunderstanding and misconceptions and all that, they thought, well, Abraham married a wife, that's okay, but when he had another wife, that's illegitimate. You know, that's their own concepts. It's not God's concepts. It's not biblical concepts. Even though the Jews developed a very negative attitude toward multiple marriages in the 11th century, there was a famous rabbi, Rabbi Saadia Gaon, that anathemized anybody who marries more than one wife. Well, that's because, not because it was anti-biblical, but because he saw an awful lot of abuse within the family, and so he, maybe himself experienced that in his own life, and he just hated that, and when he had a chance, this is what he did. But in either case, it has nothing to do with the biblical teaching, so the mind of God, even though in the beginning there was only one man, one woman. But God did not regard this as sin, just not ideal. Because of human nature, you know, it creates oftentimes problems. And nevertheless, Ishmael was the son of Abraham, Hagar was the wife of Abraham, and all the concubines of Abraham and Keturah were his wives. Not illegitimate wives and with illegitimate children. You see, God is, you know, is not too appreciative of people that put things in his mouth when he didn't say them, or speak in his name when he hasn't spoken through them, and too many people do it, unfortunately. And that's not God's ways. Anyway, he was a son of Abraham, whom Hagar, the Egyptian, Sarah's handmaid, bore unto Abraham. And these are the names of the sons of Ishmael by their names, according to their generations. The firstborn was Ishmael. And then there was Nebaioth, and Kedar, and Abdiel, and Mibsam, and Misham. In other words, Hagar was still a young woman. She remarried. She had more children. And then Ishmael, of course, himself was married, and he had his children. So you have basically here the children of Ishmael, and also the children of Hagar, together. Which is which, we don't always exactly know. This could be mainly, you know, the children of Ishmael, but it could be also including some of the children of Hagar, his mother. And so we read about all these names here, Nebaioth and Kedar, and all these names are mentioned later on in the Bible. When they come in contact with the children of Israel, in prophecy we see that also several of these names in ancient documents of the Assyrians and ancient Arab documents, we see the same names also appearing. And these people, as they became families and then tribes and then nations, you know, small nations that traveled throughout those areas, and those who study the history of the Arab nation or the Arab people and those territories, they find to this very day many of these names in those places. And one of them was Tema. From that, Tema means south, or Teman, and from that came Yemen, you know, present-day Yemen in the south. Yemen means south. And so you see many of these names, Hadad, this name is still pretty common to this very day among the Arabs, children of Ishmael, and many of these names later on will come to play in history. And in the future also, God mentions these names that are still going to be there, and the people of those nations that will come and worship the great king, the father that is a god of their father Abraham. By then, you know, it's going to be a full circle. They will come back to the god of their father Abraham. They will come back to their literal father, who is going to be there also in Jerusalem. And this is what God has in mind to begin with. Full circle. Well, the whole family of Abraham is going to be blessed from the beginning until the end, even though in between they are in rebellion, and that includes also the children of Israel. But they all come back to him, and they all come back to the Father. They all come back to the bosom of Abraham. You see? And that's what God is saying. That's in essence what the parable is all about, that you find in Luke chapter 16, about Lazarus and the rich man. They both died, and when the righteous one, that God considered to be the righteous, Lazarus, died, the angels took him into the bosom of Abraham. And those who are ignorant, you know, they think about heaven and hell, and they invent all kind of doctrines that he went to heaven. Nowhere does it say that he went to heaven. Abraham is dead and he's buried, and all these righteous men never received the promises. They're all awaiting the resurrection. So obviously in the resurrection. When Abraham is resurrected, Lazarus also will be resurrected. That's according to the parable, and to begin with, it's a parable. It's a non-existent reality. Just a parable, a story that he was telling them to make a point. And a lot of people don't understand the way they think in the Middle East. When you hear parables, the parables are not true. They're just trying to make a point. And people take the parable and make it a reality. And they totally misunderstand this kind of way of thinking. That Christ was using, that the apostles were using, that the prophets were using, and you have to have a Middle Eastern mentality to understand what it is all about. And so all these people are going to be restored to God, and they will be the children of God again, and they will all come to the bosom of Abraham. And there, when he died, Lazarus, and then he was resurrected, he found himself in the bosom of Abraham, that is, in a relationship with his father, because now all are resurrected. And so all the children of Ishmael and all these names that you hear here, in the future they will come preeminent again, and they will all come back after all these people were alive and they died, and they will all come back, and they were children of Abraham. And Abraham knew them by name. You see, he knew them very personally. And many of these names that you hear here, so obviously they're going to come back to the bosom of their father when they repent and turn away and accept, you know, the sacrifice that was given for them and the blood that was shed for them, just like all the children of Israel. And so these things will become so much more meaningful at the time. That's the reason why God was recording it in his book. It's important to him. And verse 16 we read, and these are the sons of Ishmael. So these are the sons of Ishmael that we read here in particular, not necessarily the sons of Hagar. They are mentioned elsewhere. They're mentioned here by their names, by their villages, by their encampments. In other words, they gave those names, well, these sons, to the areas where they lived. And later on they migrated, so they took those names with them. And out of him came 12 princes according to their nations. You see, God is blessing mightily Abraham, not only through Isaac, you see, not only through Sarah, but also through Keturah, where he had many, many children. You see, through Hagar he had only one son, Ishmael, but through Keturah he had many children. Then he had the concubines and he had many children. As Josephus tells us, 32 of them. So there's an awful lot of blessings there that are flowing in the direction of Abraham and his children. And now we read about Ishmael, and these are the years of the life of Ishmael, 137 years. So he lived a long life too. So he was in his 90s when he helped his brother Isaac bury their father Abraham, and then he lived another 37 years after that. And he also wilted, you know, expired here in the English translation, and died, and was gathered into his people. And of course, it's again an idiom unto his people, because, you know, what people did he have? You see, his mother Hagar came from Egypt, and, you know, he didn't go and get buried, you know, with his grandparents there in Egypt. But he was buried, in other words, among those who would come later on that would be of him. And that's a terminology with his people. And they dwelt from Havilah unto Shur, that is before Egypt, as he go toward Ashur, over against all his brethren he did settle. And so, his territory, in other words, his people lived originally at that time from the south, and they went all the way east to Ashur, and Ashur, that's talking about up north. So for a while they were up and down, and then later on they were mainly in the east and in the south and other places where they migrated. And All that he was in the presence, as it says, of his brothers. And his brothers is a biblical terminology, you know, all of his sons and daughters and family. And obviously also his brothers were the children of Isaac and Jacob. And then later on, as they came into the land, they were still brothers. You know, they may have had problems, but they were brothers. And so God devoted here a good portion of this chapter, well, as later on called chapters, but a good portion here of a description of the son of Abraham. And also, that has to do with the relationship that they would have in the future with the son of Abraham, and also in terms of the ultimate future, when God is going to reign upon this earth and this people will be his people again. Anyway, we're going to stop at this point. This is again Mordecai Joseph, and next time we'll continue from this point with the sons of Isaac and the history of Isaac. And until then, greetings to all of God's people.